So, ladies and gentlemen, we are the Aquaporin 2, constituted by Dr. Isha, Dr. Subhashri, Dr. Louis, and Dr. Jitu. Dr. Isha, can you just introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Isha. I'm working as an assistant professor in central part of India, and I'm an early career nephrologist, very excited to be discussing the trials on steroid-based IgA nephropathy.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Louis Firquet from Belgium in Liège. I'm working in the University Hospital, close from the city. I'm also really, really interested, and I can't wait to talk about this interesting subject of IgA nephropathy and the role of steroids.
Dr. Subhashri.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Subhashri, an early career nephrologist from southern India, working as an assistant professor in a government-run institution. And I'm happy to join you all today in discussing about this interesting topic of steroids and treatment of IgA nephropathy.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jitu, and I'm an assistant professor of nephrology in a medical college in South India. And I'm interested in glomerular disease and more so in IgA nephropathy. And I'll be hosting you for this podcast today. So welcome to our podcast, where we will be discussing some groundbreaking trials in IgA nephropathy. Trials which tested the wonder drugs, steroids, as treatment for IgA nephropathy. The role of ACE inhibitors in the treatment of IgA nephropathy is written in stone, especially with its mention in the KDIGO guidelines 2021 for glomerular disease. But whether steroids have a role in the same has been an enigma for the nephrologist. So today in this podcast, we'll be highlighting the role of our good old steroids in the treatment of IgA nephropathy through all the landmark trials. So let's start with the STOP IgA nephropathy trial. So Louis, can you tell us more about this trial and why is it significant?
Yeah, sure. The STOP IgA nephropathy trial aims to evaluate the efficacy and safety of the immunosuppressive therapy in patients with IgA nephropathy and was published in 2015 in the New England Journal of Medicine. The role of immunosuppression in the treatment of IgA nephropathy against conservative supportive antiproteinic therapy has always been a matter of debate, making this subject a very significant one.
That's a crucial question. The KDIGO guidelines suggest the use of systemic glucocorticoids only in IgA nephropathy patients at high risk of progressive chronic kidney disease, despite the maximal supportive care. However, the major randomized controlled trials were literally criticized for the inconsistency in the blocking of the renin-angiotensin system. Hence, it's therefore interesting to have designed a trial which support where the supportive treatment was very well standardized. So can you provide us an overview of the trial design and the patient population involved?
The STOP IgA nephropathy trial is a multicentric, open-label, randomized control trial conducted in Germany from February 2008 through October 2011 and comparing two approaches. Supportive care alone versus immunosuppressive therapy combined with supportive care. When we look at the inclusion criteria, they recruited 18 to 70 years old patients with primary IgA nephropathy confirmed on biopsy, with proteinuria level above 0.75 gram per day, plus hypertension and impaired renal function with an eGFR under 90 milliliter per minute. Patient with an eGFR under 30 as secondary and rapidly progressive IgA nephropathy or other chronic renal diseases were excluded.
Great. So now that we know what type of a study STOP IgA nephropathy trial was and the inclusion criteria, Louis, could you also tell us how they proceeded with the study, like the methodology?
After that, all patients were enrolled in a six-month run-in phase, during which supportive care was delivered with optimization of hypertension and proteinuria with the use of RAS blockade. Finally, patients who had a persistent proteinuria with urine protein excretion of at least 0.75 gram per day at the end of the run-in period were randomly assigned to receive supportive care alone or supportive care plus immunosuppressive therapy for 3 years.
Yes, Louis, but what's particularly worth noting here is that patients with proteinuria higher than 3.5 gram per day at the end of the run-in phase were excluded from this trial. But we know that such patients have a very high risk of progression and have been reported to have a particularly good response to immunosuppression.
Great observation, Subhashree. I think it's so evident that this trial is not studying patients with really severe disease. So can you describe in more detail the approach used in the immunosuppressive therapy group?
Yes, of course. They use two approaches for immunosuppression according to the GFR level. In patients with an eGFR upper than 60 milliliter per minute, corticosteroids alone were used as follows. 1 gram of methylprednisolone intravenously daily for 3 days at the start of months 1, 3, and 5. And oral prednisolone at a dose of 0.5 milligram kilo every other day. In patients with an eGFR between 30 to 59 milliliter per minute, in addition to tapering prednisolone, cyclophosphamide at the dose of 1.5 milligram kilos per day was used for 3 months, followed by azathioprine at a dose of 1.5 milligram kilo per day during months 4 to 36.
That sounds extremely interesting. I'm curious to know what the endpoints of the trials were.
Indeed, it is. There were two main endpoints, ranked in a hierarchical order. First, a complete clinical remission defined by a protein to creatinine ratio under 0.2 and a decrease in eGFR of less than 5 milliliter per minute from baseline at the end of the trial. Second, a decrease in eGFR of at least 15 milliliter per minute compared with the initial eGFR. There were several secondary endpoints as well, including development of end-stage kidney disease, proteinuria at 12 and 36 months, and disappearance of microhematuria. Another interesting and crucial point was to verify the undesirable effects, particularly infectious ones.
So now we know how this trial was designed. We are eager to hear the results. Louis, go ahead.
Yeah, after the trials period, it was found that 34% of the patients were actually not eligible for randomization. They randomized a total of 177 participants. These show that the degree of full clinical remission was significantly higher in the immunosuppressive group at 5 versus 17%. But it was mainly driven by the remission of proteinuria, as unfortunately, there were no significant difference in GFR between the two groups. Similarly, no significant difference was observed between the two groups in other outcomes. So the results are somewhat contrasted and therefore disappointing. When it comes to infectious risk, as expected, they observed more non-severe and severe events of infection in the immunosuppression group.
So the authors concluded that the addition of immunosuppression to the ongoing comprehensive supportive care was not beneficial in patients with moderate IgA nephropathy. Only 17% of patients in the immunosuppression group had a full clinical remission despite receiving intense immunosuppressive therapy. This, as is quite obvious, induced a greater number of adverse effects.
True. But I think it's still worth pointing out that they demonstrate the importance of the optimal supportive care. The main difference with previous studies is that they included a run-in phase with comprehensive supportive care before adding immunosuppressive therapy and showed that a large number of patients responded to this therapy. And I think that's where this study makes a positive point.
Great, Louis. So stop IgA nephropathy for discussion to start was a great starter for this podcast. So after the detailed discussion of the STOP IgA nephropathy trial, we're going to speak about another trial in which oral steroids have been used. It is the TESTING trial. This is one of the important studies which raised some optimism regard to steroids. So what does TESTING stand for? And can you elaborate on this trial, Isha?
Yes, sure, Jitu. So testing stands for therapeutic evaluation of steroids in IgA nephropathy. Here, the steroids were compared with the placebo. All patients received the trial intervention over and above the optimal antiproteinuric therapy with the ACE inhibitors and ARBs. It was an international, multicentric, investigator-initiated, randomized controlled trial carried out in China, India, Malaysia, Canada, and Australia.
So while speaking about this testing trial, we come across two doses of steroids, the high-dose testing trial and the low-dose testing trial. So could you elaborate on the type of steroid used in the trial and the different dosages used? So can you also let us know the duration and the number of patients in each group?
So the steroid used here is methylprednisolone. The trial can be divided into a full-dose testing trial and a low-dose testing trial. The full-dose one used a dose of 0.6 to 0.8 milligram per kg of methylprednisolone, which was given over a period of 2 months. This dose was then tapered over 6 to 9 months. The total number of patients in this group was 262, with 136 receiving the drug and 126 receiving the placebo. It was initiated in 2012, but was stopped in 2015 by Data and Safety Monitoring Committee. This was due to an excessive side effect profile which was observed, and the participants were followed up for a median follow-up period of 6.1 years. Here, actually, the investigators subsequently decided to revise the protocol to recruit additional patients and to reduce the dose of methylprednisolone from 0.6 to 0.8 that was being used in the high dose to 0.4 mg per kg per day, which was then tapered over a period of 6 to 8 months. This was a low-dose testing trial. The number of patients recruited in this group was 241, with 121 in the steroid group and 120 here in the placebo group. The recruitment part started in 2017 and continued up till 2019. The median follow-up in this group was 2.5 years. And interestingly, they also included the PCP prophylaxis with cotrimazole for the first 3 months in low-dose steroid protocol. That makes it 262 patients in the full-dose protocol and 241 in the reduced-dose protocol. That adds up to a total of 503 patients in this testing trial.
So the timeline of this trial and the modification of the steroid protocol after the DSMC stopped the high-dose steroid administration looks very interesting. The investigators looks very, very determined and they didn't give up. So what are the inclusion and exclusion criteria for patients in this trial?
All the patients in this trial had biopsy-proven IgA nephropathy, and their proteinuria was more than 1 grams per day. They had a GFR between 20 to 120 ml per minute in the full dose arm, and talking about the low dose arm, it was 30 to 120. They excluded the patients who otherwise had a strong indication for steroids, like those with presenting IgA nephropathy, and patients having strong contraindications for corticosteroids. Also, they excluded those patients who had secondary IgA, IgA vasculitis, malignant hypertension, age less than 14 years, and those who had been on any kind of a systemic immunosuppressive therapy in the past 1 year.
So now that we have understood the trial population and the intervention, we need to understand the primary and the secondary outcomes which were studied in this trial. Was it an event-driven trial, and was there any modification from the initial planned sample size in this trial?
The primary outcome was decided as a composite outcome of 40% decrease in GFR, a development of ESRD, and death due to kidney disease. Secondary outcomes were like decrease in GFR, combined with kidney failure and all-cause death, proteinuria reduction, and GFR slope. The trial definitely was event-driven. It required at least 160 primary events to give a power of 90%. The trial was initially designed to detect a 30% risk reduction with 90% power, which required about 750 patients, which was later modified.
The proteinuria and glomerular filtration rate are the two important factors which determine renal outcomes in patients. So what is the baseline proteinuria and the GFR in the patients recruited to the trial? Can you also elaborate on the biopsy findings of the cohort to understand the patients recruited in the trial?
Of course. The mean GFR in the group was 61.5 ml per minute, and the mean 24-hour proteinuria was 2.46 grams. Most of these patients, they had M1, E0, S1.
Okay. So, Isha, can you also tell us the results of the testing trial?
Yeah, the primary outcomes actually occurred in 74 in the methylprednisolone group as compared to 106 in the placebo group. The hazard ratio was 0.53, which was statistically significant. However, there is no difference in the effect size between the two steroid groups compared to placebo. The secondary outcomes of kidney failure requiring dialysis or a transplant was significantly lower in methylprednisolone group than the placebo group. The time average proteinuria was significantly lower in the methylprednisolone group as compared to placebo. It was 1.7 grams versus 2.4 grams per day. The difference was seen in the early part of the follow-up and was not seen after 3 years. The annual rate of the kidney loss, function loss, was 2.5 ml per minute in the methylprednisolone group, if we compare it against 4.97 ml per minute in the placebo group. The effect was no different between the high dose and the low dose steroid protocol, again reiterating the fact that a low dose steroid is good enough.
So when you speak about steroids, how can we not speak about the adverse events? So what was the difference between the adverse events in the low and the high dose of steroids in this trial?
Of course, serious adverse events did occur in this trial as well. But talking about the numbers, serious adverse events were reported in 28 participants, which was 10.9%, randomized to methylprednisolone group, and 7 participants, that is 2.8%, in the placebo group. The excess adverse events were related to the increased hospitalizations and infections. The adverse events were more commonly seen in the high-dose methylprednisolone group, as we were expecting it to be, as compared to the low-dose steroid group versus placebo. There were 3 deaths in all in the steroid groups, 3 in the high dose versus 1 in the low dose.
So now we've seen the testing trial in detail. So we need to discuss about the strengths and deficiencies of the study. So can you speak about the strengths of the testing study?
Yeah, the study showed a positive signal for steroids, if we talk about that, Jitu, in the treatment of IgA nephropathy. The study had a very good number of patients. That was 503. It's quite a number. It studied the effects of steroid against optimal antiproteinuric therapy. It also studied 2 doses of steroids, high dose and low dose. It showed that steroids significantly reduced the composite outcome of decline in kidney function, kidney failure, and death due to kidney disease. The effects were no different between low-dose steroid groups and the high-dose steroid groups, with increase in adverse events in the high-dose group.
That is quite a good message about the strengths of the testing study. And what were the deficiencies of the study?
Yes, testing trial also came with its own deficiencies. The limitations were the majority of the patients were from China. The sample size was reduced halfway through the study, and the study intervention was also modified halfway. The reduction in proteinuria, which was seen initially, was actually not maintained after 36 months of randomization. A post hoc analysis also showed that the benefits and outcomes may decrease after time.
Thank you, Isha. That was great. So now, after all these trials with steroids, we now have a new weapon in our armamentarium, the Nefecon. So Subhashree, do you think it's just another steroid? Or can you please elaborate on the Nefecon trial?
Yeah, so we know that IgA nephropathy is a multi-hit process, and there is increasing evidence for the involvement of gut mucosal immune system and gut-derived galactose-deficient IgA1 in the pathogenesis of primary IgA nephropathy. In the mucosal layer of the intestine are aggregations of lymphoid follicles, which are named Peyer's patches, and these follicles form a part of the gut-associated lymphoid system and serve in antigen sampling and also appear to be an important source of primed galactose-deficient IgA1 expressing mucosal B cells. So the immune complex is formed between galactose-deficient IgA1 and either IgG or IgA autoantibodies and gets deposited in the mesangium. This triggers inflammatory and fibrotic cascades that culminates in progressive renal damage. So a new formulation of glucocorticoid, the oral budesonide, that specifically deploys in the ileum with limited systemic exposure was designed, and that drug is Nefecon.
That sounds like an exciting option in the treatment of IgA nephropathy. Does that mean steroids can be used safely without increased risk of infection and other steroid-related side effects?
Well, the use of Nefecon showed promising results in reducing proteinuria and eGFR decline in phase 2 trial, which was the Nefigan trial, and that paved the way to the current Nefigad trial. It is unique in that this phase 3 trial has a two-part design, and it studied the safety of Nefecon in patients with primary IgA nephropathy. In brief, it was a multicenter, double-blinded, randomized controlled trial involving 199 biopsy-proven IgA nephropathy patients with more than 0.8 gram proteinuria per gram creatinine, with age group falling between 23 to 73 years and eGFR between 35 to 90 mils, and also on an optimized ACE inhibition for 3 months. These patients were then randomized to receive either oral budesonide 16 milligrams daily or placebo for a period of 9 months, which was the first part of the trial. And these patients were followed up for another 3 months, which was the second part of the study.
So what was the endpoint of the trial?
So the primary endpoint in this trial was 24-hour urine protein creatinine ratio after 9 months. The secondary endpoint being decline in eGFR at 9 and 12 months and change in proteinuria at 12 months. The study found patients treated with Nefecon had 27% lower proteinuria than those in control arm at 9 months, as well as had preservation of eGFR with an average of 3.8 mils per minute.
Yeah, in fact, the study design by itself was a novel one when it comes to Nefigard. So whenever steroids are involved in any study, the question arises about its complications. So Subhashree, can you tell us about the treatment emergent adverse effects in Nefigard?
Yeah, as we all know, steroids can be double-edged swords. In Nefigard, the discontinuation due to treatment emergent adverse events was 9.3% in Nefecon, whereas it was 1% in placebo. Now, the ones that qualified as treatment emergent adverse effects included hypertension, peripheral edema, muscle spasms, and acne. Surprisingly, severe adverse events were seen only in 4 patients in Nefecon arm and 1 patient in placebo. But it is unclear with regards to what events were considered as severe. Finally, regarding infections, there again, the infection events were similar between the two groups. It was 39.2% in Nefecon versus 41% in placebo, with absolutely nil severe infections causing hospitalizations or death.
That indeed looks promising. Also, more patients with diabetes and pre-diabetes were randomized to the treatment with Nefecon by chance. Additionally, several patients in both treatment arms were overweight or obese. Without concurrent biopsies, the contribution of diabetes and obesity-related proteinuria cannot be excluded. Despite these confounding factors, Nefecon still succeeded in reducing the proteinuria. In spite of these initial promises, what do you consider were limitations of this trial?
Now, Nefigard did come with limitations. First of all, it included patients who were primarily Caucasians. Although there is no currently robust data or reason to believe that the mechanism of disease varies between races or ethnicity. Next, contemporaneous biopsies were not required to enter into the study per se, which some of us would otherwise feel is very important, especially to make an association between the histological features and the response to treatment. Additionally, understanding how Nefecon modulates the different components of the pathogenic cascade in IgA nephropathy may allow identification of novel biomarkers to better inform the future use of Nefecon in clinical practice. And not to forget that a head-to-head comparison trial that would compare a low-dose systemic steroid with Nefecon is more likely to establish the superiority of Nefecon, especially in places where the cost of procuring a drug does play a major role in treatment of the disease.
Great, Subhashree. So this was our maiden podcast as Pod 2 Aquaporins, where we discussed the landmark trials testing steroids. As we come to the end of this insightful podcast, we find ourselves reflecting on the critical topic of scientific trials testing steroids for IgA nephropathy. The discussions surrounding testing Nefecon and Stop IgA have shed light on the advancements and challenges in treating this complex kidney disorder. Throughout our conversations, we have delved into the promising outcomes and the potential benefits of this trial, but we must also remember the importance of cautious optimism. While the results are encouraging, further research and long-term data are essential to fully understand the effectiveness and safety of this therapy. Thank you so much for hearing to us as we sign off. Until next time, thank you so much.